Welcome to the debate. Imagine trying to write a mathematical equation for the exact moment a laugh turns into a sob.
Good luck with that.
Right? I mean, for centuries, science has basically told us you cannot do that. Emotion is too messy. It's too subjective, too deeply human to fit into the pristine, rigid world of numbers.
It's a biological process, not a math problem.
Well, but what if we have just been using the wrong kind of math? Today, we are exploring Dr. Bishara Sehaly's white paper, Emotional Sentience as Relational Architecture. And this paper, it synthesizes Catherine Pale Kaufman's biological framework of emotion with a highly advanced relational exceptional mathematical program.
It is a massive intellectual undertaking, honestly.
It really is. And I will be arguing that this exceptional mathematics provides the necessary literal structural scaffold to explain how human meaning and subjectivity operate without reducing them to cold mechanics.
And I will be arguing that while Kaufman's biological insights into human emotion are undeniably profound, superimposing abstract algebraic topologies onto our messy biology is a speculative analogical leap. It's one that risks massive empirical inflation.
I completely disagree, but let's set the foundation first. We need to understand what Kaufman actually means when she talks about emotion.
Right, the biological ladder.
Exactly. Her biological ladder proves that emotion is not some secondary phenomenon. It's not, you know, an epiphenomenon that just tags along after we think about something.
It is the driving force.
Yes, it is an ancient self-regulatory sensory system. It is essentially the evaluative software of life itself.
Look, the power of Kaufman's biological framework is undeniable. I'll give you that. The idea that thought and feeling are dual streams of subjective awareness is a brilliant shift in how we view the organism.
It changes everything about cognitive science.
It does. It completely upends the purely cognitive, computer-like view of human experience, where the brain just endlessly crunches data. But we have to be incredibly careful here.
Careful of what, exactly?
Category confusion. I strongly object to treating this relational, exceptional mathematical ladder as an ontological reality for a biological system. The text itself actually warns against this.
The text acknowledges the tension, yes.
It warns against it. We are talking about things like the Auber algebra and the E7 Lie group. These are stunningly complex formal systems used in theoretical physics and quantum mechanics.
Which makes them uniquely capable of modeling complex states.
But they are not feelings. They are not living organisms. I worry that by mapping these pristine geometric forms directly onto human affective states, we are just hiding biological complexity behind an abstract topological curtain. It doesn't actually give scientists a workable, measurable model.
Okay, I see why you demand that distinction. But we have to ask why standard math fails biology in the first place.
Because biology is wet and messy and math is abstract.
No, it's a structural failure. Binary logic fails because a one in a computer is a one regardless of what happened 5 seconds ago. It has zero history.
Sure, standard computers lack temporal context.
And human emotion doesn't work like that at all. Let's look at the foundational building blocks Dr. Sahali proposes, starting with the very grammar of feeling and the Fano plane.
Let's translate that for the listener, though, because Fano plane sounds intimidating. You are talking about a specific geometrical diagram, right?
Yeah, exactly.
7 points connected by 7 lines.
Exactly. It is the simplest projective plane. But what really matters is what it does. It provides a minimal grammar of lawful triadic closure.
Meaning what, practically?
In plain terms, it requires 3 parts to exist as a closed system. Think about an organism in an environment.
Okay.
You cannot just have the inside of the organism and the outside world. You fundamentally require a boundary between them to mediate the relationship.
The skin, the cell wall.
Right.
Exactly. The Fano plane gives us a rigorous mathematical way to map primitive evaluative distinctions, things like approach versus avoid or relevance versus irrelevance.
Mm-hmm.
It shows how these primitives belong to a unified, closed whole rather than being isolated floating data points.
Okay, I follow the logic.
But a grammar of closure is still just a structural skeleton. You are taking a mathematical incident structure and saying, look, it requires three parts, just like a biological system interacting with an environment requires an organism, a world, and a boundary.
Because it maps perfectly.
It is a neat analogy, but biology is infinitely messier than seven perfectly intersecting lines on a theoretical plane.
It is not just an analogy, though, because the faunal plane is the exact mathematical mechanism that generates the Octonians. And this is where we actually get to the algebra of emotional meaning, which is incredibly literal for human experience.
Ah, the Octonians.
Yes. The Octonians are an eight-dimensional mathematical algebra that is distinctly non-commutative and non-associative.
Meaning the order in which you multiply things completely changes the answer.
Precisely. In standard math, 2 times 3 is the same as 3 times 2. That is commutativity.
Right.
But in the Octonians, sequence and grouping dictate the final reality. This perfectly formulates how emotion works. Think about this. Human fear followed by recognition is a fundamentally different emotional state than recognition followed by fear.
Well, that's a psychological truth, yes.
It's an algebraic one. One sequence is a sudden shock that resolves into safety. A shadow turns out to be a friend. The other is safety that shatters into terror. A friend suddenly pulls a knife. The exact same two variables are present, but the sequence alters the fundamental ontology of the feeling itself.
I come at it from a completely different way. Your example of fear and recognition is a beautiful, deeply resonant psychological observation.
But it's grounded in the math.
Is it, though? It highlights perfectly how human composition is context-sensitive. But I have to ask, is human sequence-dependent feeling genuinely governed by an eight-dimensional normed division algebra?
Why wouldn't it be?
Because we can observe that sequence and grouping matter in human psychology without claiming that the neural pathways of the brain are literally executing octonionic multiplication. It feels like we are finding a math problem that behaves like a human problem and just declaring they are the identical thing.
I am not convinced by that line of reasoning at all, because this isn't about the brain doing literal grade school arithmetic. It is about the fundamental syntax of reality.
That's quite a claim.
If we accept Kaufman's premise that standard logic is insufficient to explain how a human being references themselves in a shifting environment, we mathematically require an oriented non-associative algebra.
Require?
Yes, mathematically require. We need a relational field where history and context strictly dictate meaning. Commutative math cannot mathematically model context dependence.
I'm not defending commutative math here.
But the Octonians are the required formal syntax for any system where the order of lived experience alters the meaning of the whole. You can't just hand wave that away as a metaphor.
But the text on appendices warn against this exact literalism. The math offers a formal analog. When we say an emotional sequence is a non-commutative algebra, we are committing empirical inflation.
I don't see it as inflation. I see it as precision.
Let's assume for a moment you are right about the algebra. Let's say emotional events combine based on strict mathematical sequence. A sequence is still just an event. It doesn't explain who is experiencing the event.
Ah.
Right? How does an octonionic build a subjective self that actually feels the fear?
That is the exact right question. And it is why we cannot stop at algebra. We have to look at the geometry of the lived world.
Moving up the ladder.
Exactly. This is where we confront the problem of the subjective observer. Classical science eliminates interiority entirely. It looks at the world as just a vector space full of external objects bumping into each other.
Billiard balls on the table.
Precisely. But Dr. Saheli introduces triality, which is a special mathematical symmetry of spin 8, to give us a formal mathematical image of irreducible plurality.
Again, let's ground this for people. What does spin 8 triality actually mean for a human being walking down the street?
Okay, let's use a camera analogy. In classical math, you only have the vector. That is the photograph, the external observable object.
The thing out there in the world.
Right. But triality mathematically forces two other perspectives to exist simultaneously. the spinner, and the conjugate spinner.
And how do those map to the human?
In this framework, the vector maps to manifest relation, the external world. The spinner maps to generative interiority, which is like the internal mechanics of the camera itself, shaping how the light is actually captured.
Okay.
And the conjugate spinner maps to reflexive inwardness, the photographer actually looking through the lens, fully aware that they are taking a picture. Suddenly, we have a mathematical geometry that maps the object, the internal processing, and the conscious self all at once.
All coexisting.
Yes. They are co-fundamental. You do not have to choose between objective reality and subjective feeling anymore.
That is a compelling philosophical reframing. I really do appreciate the elegance of it. But have you considered the stark risk of textual overextension here?
Overextension how?
Triality is an incredibly complex symmetry involving rotations in eight-dimensional space. It has not come neatly labeled with outer world, inner world, and self.
Well, math doesn't come with English labels, no.
Right. So declaring that our internal generative state operates strictly like a mathematical spinner, does that actually help a neuroscientist map an action perception loop?
It gives them the right topology to start looking.
Phenomenologists like Maurice Merleau-Ponty escaped the trap of the objective-subjective divide perfectly well using language and observational psychology. He wrote beautifully about how the body is intertwined with the world without ever needing to invoke exceptional Jordan algebras.
Merleau-Ponty was brilliant, yes, but he used language which is inherently metaphorical. Biology keeps trying to find the literal feeling inside the physical tissue of the brain, which is a massive category error.
I agree, it's an error.
We are trapped in Cartesian dualism, mind over here, matter over there. To escape that scientifically, not just philosophically, we need a mathematical geometry capable of hosting intrinsic phase and fiber-like organization.
Fiber-like organization?
Yes. Kaufman talks about a Mobius-like causal flow between the mind and the world.
Like a Mobius strip where you trace the outside and suddenly you are on the inside without ever actually crossing an edge?
Exactly. It has absolute continuity across apparent duality. If you do not use exceptional mathematics to model the topology of a self that is bounded yet totally connected to the whole, like a toroidal donut-shaped topology, you simply cannot formalize what Kaufman observed in biology.
A donut-shaped topology of the self.
Yes.
Furthermore, Dr. Salhe points to the Albert algebra, which is essentially a matrix of these octonions, to model the geometry of a sentient state. It gives us a mathematical space where explicit physical sectors, like your bodily tension and relational couplings, like how salient a thread is in the room, exist simultaneously.
I mean, it sounds incredibly rigorous to say the geometry of the lived world is an Albert algebra, but I think anyone listening right now who has ever been to therapy or studied basic psychology is scratching their head.
Why? It maps perfectly to lived experience.
Operationally, what does that mean for biological science? How do we empirically test a toroidal topology of the self? A camera takes a static picture. The Albert algebra gives us a geometric state, but emotion isn't static.
No, it's not.
It is a fluid temporal process.
Which brings us perfectly to the dynamic level of this architecture. You are entirely right. Emotion is temporally extended. It involves memory. It involves anticipating the future.
Right. It moves.
A single static configuration cannot model that. So to hold a subject moving through time, the framework introduces the Freudenthal triple system, or FTS.
And how does the FTS solve the problem of time?
The FTS provides a transformational phase space. It is a doubled state structure that is mathematically capable of holding the present physical state, the latent alternative possibilities, and the anticipation of the future, all at the exact same time.
Okay, a phase space.
But the crown jewel of this dynamic level is the E7 quartic invariant.
Oh boy.
E7 is an exceptional Lie group, and its invariant gives us a mathematical measure of whole system coherence.
Okay. Stop right there. Operationalizing an E7 invariant in human emotion is the absolute peak of empirical inflation.
E7 is a highly complex mathematical object used in string theory and quantum gravity.
But think about the clinical implications. Emotional states like existential dread or profound joy aren't just local signals firing in the amygdala. They are lived registrations of whole system integration or fragmentation.
I don't disagree with the system's view.
Think of the human organism like a massive symphony orchestra. Reductive biology says a panic attack is just a loud trumpet playing out of turn, so let's drug the trumpet.
Right, the localized symptom model.
Exactly. But E7 coherence suggests the panic attack is the sudden loss of tempo across the entire orchestra. The E7 invariant is the math that finally lets us measure the harmony itself, not just the individual instruments.
I love the orchestra metaphor. I really do. It beautifully illustrates why we need holistic, systems-level thinking in medicine. But while it sounds profoundly meaningful to say that therapeutic change involves altering the algebra and geometry of the sentient field, how on earth is a clinician supposed to measure a patient's invariant quartic coherence?
The math exists whether the clinician can measure it or not.
Does a therapist calculate the patient's E7 invariant to decide if they are experiencing resonance or dread? We cannot build an E7 scanner for a therapist's office. If the map is drawing territory that doesn't empirically exist in a measurable biological medium, it is not science.
But isn't mapping the architecture the mandatory first step before building the instrument?
Not if the map is drawing a completely different planet.
Look at the history of physics. We mapped the mathematics of black holes decades before we had the instruments to photograph one. And frankly, this coherence does exist experientially.
Experientially, yes. Empirically.
If we shift the paradigm to view affective dysregulation as a cross-level mismatch in a dynamic phase space, it forces medicine to completely abandon reductive symptom-suppressing models.
Which I am all for.
Right. So if anxiety isn't just a chemical imbalance, but a lived registration of a fragmenting whole system coherence, literally a drop in the altimeter of the E7 invariant, then treatment must address the total relational architecture. It changes the entire philosophy of medicine, even if we do not have the biological E7 scanner in the clinic today.
I agree entirely that modular, purely syntactic models of emotion are wildly insufficient. Treating the brain like a computer processing ones and zeros has completely failed to explain human consciousness.
Glad we agree on that.
Feeling is fundamentally semantic. Kaufman's biological insights into the self-regulatory nature of emotion are deeply compelling. But you can embrace a systems-level semantic view of biology without declaring that exceptional lie groups are the literal physical blueprint of human sentience.
But can you formalize that semantic biology without them?
I think you can accept that science currently lacks the math to fully explain consciousness, without borrowing math from high-level theoretical physics and declaring it the definitive solution.
It's not borrowing, it's recognizing a universal structure.
The Freudenthal-Titz magic square, which organizes all these exceptional structures we've discussed today, provides a beautiful family genealogy of mathematical worlds. It is a marvel of human thought.
Absolutely.
But to say that this specific algebraic unfolding is the literal ontological architecture of human consciousness remains an interpretive exercise. It is a brilliant heuristic. It provides profound philosophical illumination. But it lacks the direct empirical translation needed to cross the bridge from theoretical math to biological science.
I see why you demand that empirical translation right now. I do. But I return to the paper's central thesis, the biological ladder and the mathematical ladder mutually illuminate each other.
Mm-hmm.
Kaufman's biology tells the mathematics what it must preserve, irreducible meaning, subjectivity, and temporal flow. And the relational exceptional mathematical ladder tells biology what formal structures are strictly required to preserve those features without reducing them to mere mechanics. Emotional sentience demands an architecture capable of holding space, time, and self as mutually implicating aspects of one single relational reality.
We absolutely agree that space, time, and self must be viewed as a triad. Viewing space as structured differentiation, time as history, and the self as local reflexive closure is a brilliant conceptual reframing of what it means to be alive.
It's foundational.
My contention is simply that by adopting this highly specific, exceptional mathematics as the literal truth, we risk creating a beautiful, untestable castle in the sky. We agree that feeling is not a biological afterthought. But the tension remains. Are Octonians and triality the literal architecture of consciousness, or are they just the most sophisticated, beautiful metaphor we have found to describe a mystery we cannot yet measure?
And, you know, that is the exact tension this white paper invites us to inhabit. The mathematical ascent from the Fano plane to the E7 invariant is not, in my view, just a metaphor. It is the structural grammar required to rescue feeling from flat binary syntax.
It's a bold claim.
If we don't use this level of mathematics, we will continually reduce emotion back to cold mechanics, because that is the only other math we have built our sciences upon.
It is a question that certainly changes how you view the nature of your own mind when you wake up in the morning. That's for sure.
Indeed, it does. We must leave the listener to ponder whether their own emotional reality, their grief, their sudden joy, the nuanced shift from fear to recognition is merely a local chemical signal, or if it is the lived, breathing signature of a complex relational geometry. What Dr. Sahaly and Catherine Pale Kaufman suggest is that to map the true territory of human feeling, we have to throw away the flat grid. We have to learn to read the geometry of the lived world, where the compass points inward, outward, and backward through time, all at once. There is so much more to explore in this material. Thank you for joining us on The Debate.